Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, hitting a small ball several hundred yards and having it land in a tiny little hole sounds like a very daunting task for a blind individual. But we're going to learn how, with certain modifications, the game of golf can actually be fun, and some blind golfers can actually be very good at it.
We'll speak with Ty Thompson, an avid blind golfer and past board member of the U.S. Blind Golf Association. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Ty Thompson.
Changes is always going to be a part of life, and it depends on how you look at it. You can have change affect you, or you can affect change. And I've always looked at the positive side of things, where I take change as a matter of life and grow and learn from it.
Ty happened at the time to be talking about his loss of vision, but what he said applies to so many aspects of life.
And we'll see in the rest of the show how Ty accommodated to this change in his vision to become a very good golfer in the end.
And a happy man with a fulfilling life. Let's start by meeting Ty Thompson.
My name is Ty Thompson. I'm from Lexington, Kentucky.
Many of our listeners and guests have visual impairments. Do you?
Yes, my sight is limited to only some peripheral areas, no central vision at all.
And you lost your sight later in life, I understand.
Yes, in my late 30s and early 40s, I lost my left eye in about 3 minutes due to a rare genetic disorder, pseudoxanthoma elasticum, or PXE for short. And my right eye took about a year to lose with over 30 surgeries I've had just to save my vision.
Was this something that was expected and you had time to prepare for, or did it just happen overnight suddenly?
Well, with my left eye, as I said, 3 minutes, never knew a thing about it. Once I was seeing, next I wasn't. And in the right eye, I had time now to prepare because we diagnosed what the problem was and figured out what might happen in the future. And sure enough, it did. We were able to stall it a little bit, but eventually it took over.
How far apart were the two eyes in time?
About 8 years.
Oh, so you had a good long while to think about it.
Think about it, but not really think about it. It's one of those things, you don't focus on what might happen. You focus more on what you're doing and enjoying life.
And what were you doing at the time? How were you employed? What was your background?
Well, my background from a degree at the University of Virginia was in engineering. And then I went to work for IBM in a variety of different roles. And then after retiring, about a year later, started up as a national sales manager for the largest pharmacy software company in the United States. And that's when I lost my second eye.
Were you able to continue doing sales after you lost your vision?
Well, the company I worked with was very kind at trying to do that. But without being able to drive or go to trade shows where I could demonstrate the products, or even see what competitors might be doing and how to meet their new offerings, I effectively couldn't perform my duties at all and had to take disability retirement.
And what happened after that?
Well, I began to get educated in new ways to live my life. Everything from occupational therapy at home, where you have to learn how to mark things, whether it be a thermostat or dishwasher or microwave so that you can become functional again, even though you can't see what's there, to allowing your wife, when she gets mad at you, to rearrange the furniture to punish you. Oh, come on. That was worth a chuckle.
I was just going to say that reminds me of the old Helen Keller joke, how they used to punish Helen Keller.
That's exactly where it came from.
Well, you know, we've toyed with putting a segment into the show called Vitreous Humor, but that's the only blind joke we know.
Oh, there's another one. It's the one about when my wife is mad at me, she rearranges the furniture. When she's very mad at me, she leaves the plunger in the toilet.
Oh.
Well, now we have two.
I've never done either of those. Tempting sometimes.
Yeah, I don't want to give any ideas. Sorry about that.
And if you'd like to contribute any blind humor for future shows, or just to ask us questions or have suggestions for people to interview, send us an email, host@eyesonsuccess.net.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is golfing for the blind.
So in a bit, we're going to talk more specifically with you about golfing for the blind, but I understand you are quite a sportsman in many other regards. Can you talk about some of the other sports you're involved in?
Yes, I have very much enjoyed activities with blind snow skiing, blind sailing, and blind water skiing.
So not much stops you?
No, about the only thing is blind scuba diving.
Are there people who do that?
Yes, there are.
I guess we wanted to talk about golfing for the blind today. That sounds like an unusual sport for blind people to be involved in. But you are a blind golfer and a member of an organization for blind golfers. So can you talk a little bit about the organization and what it's like to golf being blind?
I'd love to. First off, the motto of blind golf is you don't have to see it to tee it. So with that in mind, I belong to two organizations, the United States Blind Golf Association, who is a member of the International Blind Golf Association. And blind golf is played differently than, let's say, recreational or any other type of golf, in that it's a team sport. You, the golfer, do all the strokes, all the hits and the putts. Now you have a guide or coach who gives you all the visual cues that you cannot see. For example, they'll describe the hole to you. You know, it's a 400-yard par four, dog leg a little bit, 10 degrees to the left, not much to worry about. You got a bunker on your left and about where you would drive to. So we'll stay towards the center or the right-hand side of the fairway, which will give us a good approach into the green. So they'll line you up and tell you all clear and you fire away. So that's why it's different, because it's more of a team sport.
So you talked about having a coach. What's the distinction between a coach and a caddy?
A coach or guide is different than a caddy. They're totally separate roles. In fact, in the rules of golf, you could have both, because a caddy's not allowed to technically discuss strategy with you. You are the golfer. You have to determine your own strategy. They, as a caddy, can only tell you visual cues, such as, okay, the bunker is 180 yards and it ends at 190. The green begins at 200 yards and the pin's 10 yards back from that. So they can give you those kind of distance measurements, but they can't say, you know, I recommend you hit a high fading shot into this green because that would be the best approach to it, because that's a strategy discussion.
But that's fair for a coach to give that kind of advice to a blind person, right?
That is correct.
So besides being able to play with a coach actually out on the golf course with you, have there been other rules modifications for blind players?
The United States Blind Golf Association worked with not only the USGA, but also the Royal and Ancient on three rules modifications for those that are visually impaired or blind to play competitive golf. The first one is you're allowed to have that coach or guide, because you need someone to be able to discuss with you the shape of the hole, the bend of a putt, the lie of the ball, the best way and strategy-wise to play a hole. Second rule is that coach or guide may stand behind you for any stroke of play. So it doesn't matter if it's a drive or a chip or a putt. They have to give you the visual feedback of what you did, because every stroke is muscle memory. So if you're hitting a drive off the tee box and the coach is describing, okay, started off good, it's staying straight, you got a little 5-yard fade, maybe 10 is where it's going to end up, but you'll still be in the fairway on the right-hand side.
I would guess that's very important, because you can't hear where the ball is going and you do need some feedback to know what's happening as the ball's progressing down the fairway.
True, because you have to know that you just hit that 10-yard fade so that you can feel your muscles. You actually literally remember how your muscles felt as you made contact and then go, okay, I think I know what I did. My right hand was a little back of when I made impact, so I'll make sure that my wrists are straight and not back at impact and correct that for the next time I need to remember that stroke. So you're correct. It is, with muscle memory and your coach, it's a completely different game.
And there's a third rule, apparently.
The third rule is we are allowed to ground our club in a hazard. For example, if you're in a bunker, the PGA players are never allowed to touch the sand until they actually make a stroke. So in our case, having no depth perception, we're allowed to touch the sand with our club to determine distance. But if we move the ball or touch the ball, two-stroke penalty, just like any sighted player. That's why the coach comes in really handy in those instances, because they'll actually set the club down for you in a spot where you can determine your distance, but not to cause a penalty.
So you're allowed to actually touch the ball or just the ground around it?
Just the ground around it. So I could be in, let's say, in the heather, and I could use, not knowing if the ball is actually on the ground or slightly above the ground, I can still determine my distance to the ground by touching the ground. Normally, a hazard, any player is not allowed to touch the ground. But then again, they have depth perception with having two eyes and being able to literally triangulate and figure out where the ball is.
So you're saying when you hit the ball in general, the coach is lining that shot up. You're not feeling the ball with your club or your hand to know where it is. You're really relying on how well they've lined it up and how well you two communicate.
That is correct, 100%. We do all the swinging, so it's muscle memory. For a B1, who is a totally blind player with no light entering their eyes, the coach will actually probably set the club behind the ball, step to the back, and then say all clear and allow the B1 to then make their stroke. But they'll also tell them other things, like after they set their club in place, they'll say, just remember this ball's about an inch above your feet, so don't hit it fat, or an inch below your feet, so don't hit it thin. And they'll probably give you some other clues. If you've been not following through, they'll say, remember to follow through, or remember we want to clear this bunker so you can go long but not short.
So they're really doing multiple functions all rolled into one. They're giving you all your visual feedback and they're giving you some general purpose golf coaching type advice.
Correct. And that's why we, as a blind golfer, consider them a team that we play with. In fact, when awards are given out in competition, there are always two awards, one for the player and one for the coach.
So where did you find your coach?
Well, this will be an interesting but fun story. When I lost my vision, having been an athlete before, I still wanted to play a sport. And having played mostly round ball sports, I decided, well, maybe golf is something I could do because it's not really moving. So I went to a course that was fairly local here. My wife would drive me over and drop me off, and I would try to get a game. And unfortunately, no one wanted to play with a recently blind player.
Oh, so you were just trying to round up a foursome.
I was just trying to actually get into a foursome. You know, somebody whose fourth player didn't show up. I said, hey, can I join you? And they were all like, well, we don't know how to help you. So, no, we'd prefer to beg off. So I spent a lot of my time out at the practice putting area and chipping areas and did this for several months and taught myself how to read the greens, the contours, with my feet, how to determine the distance a ball would travel based upon imagining myself like a clock face, and if I took the club back to 7 and finished the swing at 5, how far the ball would go.
Incredible.
So, okay, where did you find your coach?
Well, I've got several coaches, but they all came from one organization called the Short Knockers. And they are a great bunch of retired guys who one day were playing in a golf scramble at this course, and there were a whole bunch of them. And they said, yeah, we'll take it. We need an extra man. And they said, what do we need to do? And I said, well, just point me in the right direction. And so that worked out pretty well to get to the first green. And then they go, oh my gosh, how are we going to help you putt? I said, well, I read the greens with my feet. They're like, bull, tell us another story. I said, serious. They said, okay, do this one. So I walked off the putt. I said, I remember well. I said, okay, it's a 15-foot putt. It's fairly level. But in the last 4 feet, it breaks 4 inches to the left. I said, how about this? Let me go first. The worst you can do is get a read off me. So they line me up 4 inches to the right of the hole. I putt. Next thing I hear is, kabloka. They go, son of a gun. If I might, I'll tell you about a fun event back with the short knockers. On that first round, the reason they've really adopted me and taken such good care of me, because without their help and assistance, I never would have been in the United States Blind Golf Association. On that first day, that putt on the first hole created them to say, well, maybe there is something he can do. So on the next 6 holes, I sank that first putt 4 times. And since then, they've invited me every single time to their events because they believed in me.
I don't know. You have to watch out. If you're too good, they're going to throw you off their little team of 4 people and not want to golf against you.
Well, actually, there's some truth to that. There has been more than one time where they've lined me up intentionally wrong because of a competitive situation.
You know, we don't play regular golf, but when our kids were little, we played a fair amount of miniature golf, as many families do. And there was always a competition. No, I want to be daddy's caddy. I want to be daddy's caddy. And, you know, so we'd make them take turns so they didn't come to blows. And the kid would line up daddy and then stand behind the hole and tap the cup so that he could tell where to hit the ball. And it was kind of like everybody's success if daddy's ball went in the hole.
That is true. And that's exactly how your coach feels. If he feels he's directed you well and led you well, you'll be successful too. And it is a great feeling. You really become deeply connected with your coach.
And it sounds like you were basically self-taught. So you hadn't gone to one of these blind golfing associations to learn what techniques were successful for people in the past.
No, I really hadn't even had lessons.
And you never really played golf before you lost your vision.
Well, not competitively. I mean, every now and then you might go out with the boys drinking and end up on a golf course.
That sounds okay. That could be fun also.
So that's how I played golf, if you want to call it golf.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of competition, I've been led to believe that some blind golfers are very good golfers compared to even sighted folks.
Well, actually, as a matter of fact, you're correct. There's this one gentleman that's a member of the United States Blind Golf Association who is total. He lost his vision in a car accident. And back in the 60s, he, I believe, was the first player to shoot 4 consecutive rounds in the 70s. And he has no vision at all.
Wow. That's for 18 holes?
Yes, 4 18-round competitive days, all in the 70s.
That's incredible.
I think so, too.
And I understand that you yourself are pretty competitive.
I used to be very competitive. I really wanted to do well. And then I learned, you know, it's more about the fun and the camaraderie than the rewards. And once you get to that acceptance level, you actually get better because you're so relaxed. You're not tense and trying to perform really strong. You're encouraging your playing partner. Hey, great shot. I heard that was wonderful. Good putt, you know, whatever. Because it ends up being a lot more enjoyable that way. To answer your question, though, yes, I have won quite a few regional tournaments. I've won 3 national championships that are net championships and 1 gross. I've competed in 1 world blind golf championship. And in fact, this summer, I've been given a great honor and invited by the International Blind Golf Association to compete in a world match play event in Milan, Italy, where the 12 best North American players will play against the 12 best in the rest of the world. It'll be just like a Ryder Cup, if you're familiar with that. You'll have alternating shot, you'll have best ball, and you'll even finish the last day in a heads-up competition.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's really cool. That sounds like a lot of fun. Are you going to be able to bring your family with you for that?
Yes, I will. I'll be bringing my family along because they have been part of the encouragement in this whole process, especially when they found out it was going to be in Milan, Italy.
That should be a lot of fun.
That it should be.
I understand you're very active with the U.S. Blind Golf Association.
Well, yes, I was on the board twice for them, but rotate off to allow other people to participate. And right now I'm still quite involved. I'm their webmaster, and I work on the Hall of Fame committee. I also work on the voting and privacy committee, as well as the fundraising.
You mentioned earlier that you had to quit your job because being recently blinded, you didn't feel like you were able to do the requirements of the job. But I understand that you've been keeping yourself productive and busy since then. What kinds of things have you been doing?
Well, everything I do now is volunteer work for those that are blind or visually impaired, either newly or have moved into the area that are new to the area and need assistance, and those that are fighting the challenges of what blindness sometimes provides people with depression and anxiety and a lack of confidence. So I'm a mentor to those people that are new to vision loss and how to cope with different aspects of it. I also work with children, and I hold a children's clinic each year where in the past 2 years, I've had approximately 52, 53 each time that have shown up. And I use golf as a tool. And the whole idea is to get them to believe they can accomplish something they never thought they could before they showed up. So who could hit a ball that they can't see? But yet, if you teach them they can accomplish that before they leave in the day, how can they apply that to the rest of their life when they are faced with a challenge that they don't think they can do?
We live in Rochester, New York, which is Susan B. Anthony's hometown, and she's been quoted as saying, "Failure is impossible." That's pretty much our philosophy, and one that we try to espouse on this show, that being blind doesn't make very many things easy, but it doesn't have to make everything impossible.
That is quite true. If you have the ability to believe you can accomplish it, you really can. It doesn't matter if you're blind or vision impaired.
When are these events held for the children each year?
Well, we actually have about 3 times to 4 times as many children's events as we do adult events. They're everything from clinics to life lessons. They're held all over the United States. Our members put them on by either working with regional or statewide blind associations to gather the children in a specific locale. We always invite PGA teaching professionals in, and they actually will tell you they get more out of it than they give. And that's why once we have volunteers that show up for these events, they're begging to attend again. Because the quote I like to say is, when they teach these children something they didn't think they could accomplish, they can hear them smile because their smile is so big.
And I guess, again, if people want to find out more about these programs for children, they can just go to the association's website and either become a volunteer or get involved in the program as a participant.
Right. The usblindgolf.com has a specific page for our junior program listing all the locations, events, times, and dates, and who the sponsor is.
And just as we were about to sign off and say goodbye to Ty, Nancy asked one more question.
Is there anything we missed?
Yes. Would you like to hear about my hole-in-one?
Oh,
absolutely.
I had my first hole-in-one 3 years ago. And it was a really exciting moment. It has a lot of jocularity to it as well. My coach lined me up on the hole, and I went ahead and stroked it, and he's describing, "Oh, great, right along the line I wanted you to be on." It said, "It's landed on the green," and then there's dead silence. And two of the other guys on the tee box go, "I saw it. It went in." The other, "Yeah, it did. It went in." And I said, "Are you sure it's not behind it? It could easily be behind the hole or dropped on a lower level or something." They said, "No, we saw it go in." So we get in the carts, and we're going up there after everybody hit, of course. And then my coach says, "Well, I don't see your ball on the green." I literally jump out of a moving cart. And I go down there. He tells me, "Left, left." And so I find the pin, and I stick my hand in. Sure enough, there's a ball in the hole.
Holy mackerel.
I was so excited. Then my coach comes up with the other two guys and says, "Hey, that's pretty cool. Too bad it doesn't count." I'm like, "What do you mean it doesn't count?" He says, "Well, heck, you didn't see it go in." I said, "That does it. No drinks at the 19th hole for any of you guys."
That's pretty cool. So I assume they don't let you drive the golf cart.
Well, my insurance agent highly frowns on that, correct.
So there's one thing you can't do on the golf course.
That is true. Actually, there's a rule against it in international competition that if you attempt to drive a cart, you'll be disqualified. But let me tell you another interesting thing about that hole-in-one. That occurred on a Monday. And in the span of 6 days, there were 4 hole-in-ones from blind golf members. And there hadn't been a hole-in-one for years.
Now for this week's final item, the U.S. and International Blind Golf Associations.
Can you tell us what services and resources are offered by the U.S. Blind Golf Association and why one might want to join?
Well, actually, we have 2 main missions. Both of them deal with trying to not only improve the person, but improve their ability in blind golf and to allow them a place to play with other people of their same stature. For example, we have a junior golf program and then the adult competitions. The adult competitions usually are in sequences of regional events held around the United States, all of which allow you to qualify to play in the national championship each year. And I believe now we're on the 68th or 69th national championship. So the organization has been around since 1953, founded from veterans of World War II.
So if people want to find out more about this organization and other organizations of blind golfers, where would they go?
Well, the great thing about the U.S. Blind Golf Association, their website is entirely screen reader friendly. So you go to one of 4 locations. The most simple to remember is usblindgolf.com. It's also .org or just blindgolf.com or blindgolf.org.
That makes it easy. We also have a lot of international listeners, and I wonder if you know of any places that they can go to find resources that might be useful to them.
Yes, I do. There are actually, I believe, 13 member countries in the International Blind Golf Association. And you can go to their website with all their international tournaments.
And that web address is www.internationalblindgolf.com, all one word.
And of course, if you missed any of that, we'll have it all in the show notes associated with this show. Just go to www.eyesonsuccess.net and all of the information will be there in a nice, handy, easy-to-read format.
That's it for show number 1521. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about cake talking and typability with Dave Pinto, who developed both of those. Cake talking enables blind people to work with Sonar, which is a powerful audio editing program, and typability is a typing teaching program. He also teaches music to blind youth through his Academy of Music for the Blind. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.